Welcome back in. Final hour of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, brought to you by Volunteer State Bank. Real people, real solutions right here. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Monday morning. And as we do every Monday morning at 9 o'clock, we welcome in our good friend Darren McFarland, host of Darren Donica Chase, also handles the Nashville Predators radio network duties for the Preds radio network. Darren, what's going on? How are we doing?
Happy Snow Monday to you guys. I mean, how drunk is Middle Tennessee weather, huh? Weren't we just
nice,
wearing shorts?
Tank tops on New Year's Day, and Now we're all bundled up in the snow. It's good stuff, isn't it?
Didn't we see like mid-70s just like 24 hours earlier?
I always think about like the people who like just moved here in the last 6 months to like a year, and they're like, what is with the weather here? Is this like this all the time? And the answer is yes. Yes it is.
Yes, it is. I know.
Head on a swivel.
You think I – that's a good way of putting it. You think I would be used to it by now, but it just – I laugh. I mean, we got a good amount of snow, and it was 76 degrees 24 hours earlier.
That's always in – you know, hopefully we don't run into this situation with the Stadium Series game, but that's always kind of like what I've been thinking about in terms of like having a winter classic here. Like, can you imagine a January 1st Winter Classic here when it was like 78 and raining?
Sure.
That would have been great stuff.
Right. Well, I mean, the good news for their game, the Stadium Series, it's going to be a night game. So, you know, February, late February, I mean, it should. That should. But still, look what we're talking about. It should guarantee colder weather at night, but who knows? Who knows what it'll be? So, I don't know. What we do know is it will not be as cold as the Winter Classic this year. Holy crap.
Oh, man.
That was cold. That was just watching. It was fun.
I'm looking forward to wearing my Hawaiian t-shirt coming up on February 26th ringside at Nissan Stadium. So, Darren, the Titans win yesterday. They dominate. I think what we've come to learn and what most of us suspected for a while is a pretty fraudulent Miami Dolphins team. They win 34-3. They win back-to-back AFC South titles. You watched a lot of Titans football over the years. What's the significance in your mind from your perspective of winning division titles back-to-back for the first time in this franchise since the early 60s?
Well, let's just say, not all of us thought the Dolphins were paper tigers, were paper champions, were fraudulent. Chase McCabe thought that they were real. He had them in their top 10 when we do our top 10.
He did.
2 weeks in a row, and I referenced all their wins, and then Elijah chimed in and said, against the quarterbacks, too, and it was like, yeah. Like, I get it. Like, it's hard, and we say this, right? Like, you don't be ashamed of your wins in the NFL. It's hard to win at this level, but still, I mean, you can also look at a team objectively and say, okay, I mean, they've won seven, but there's a lot of teams probably that could be on that same winning streak with that schedule. So I'm not sure I'm buying Miami, and I was actually saying, no, I'm not buying Miami, and it played out that way, and the Titans did what they should do. The significance, Robbie, is it's a big deal, man. You think back the early days, the early years of all the success that they had, and what's crazy is there wasn't a whole lot of division championships in that success, in that window where they were really good, because unfortunately there was always seems like there was just one other team in the division. Just think about the first year when they went 13-3 when they moved into then Adelphia Coliseum. They didn't win the division.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to be kidding me, right? There was a team that went 14-2 in their division. So in Jacksonville, and the team that they beat twice. But there is significant. It is a big deal, and it is pretty interesting. I'll pat all of us on the back right here on this show. And when I joined you guys on that Monday, the day after Derrick Henry, when it was tough, right? It was tough news for everybody to swallow. Like, holy crap, who knows? We don't know if he's going to be back, if he's not. But we did say, look, the good news is they've built themselves a cushion. The good news is the division stinks. And the good news is they're still going to win the division. They're still going to make the playoffs. And guess what? All that played out. And there is significance to doing it back-to-back years. That was an impressive win yesterday. It was a win they needed in crappy conditions. Tua looked really shaky. The Dolphins didn't look great. And the Titans beat them up. And that's what good teams should do, and they did it.
And then, of course, the Bengals, who early on looked like, man, they are not going to stop the Chiefs one time in this game, come through. get the huge win. And now, Darren, the Titans are sitting there with a chance to be the one seed. I know that that's happened twice in Titans, you know, the Titans era, and both times the Ravens came in and ruined it. But how big of a deal do you think it would be for them to finish that off and have that extra time and be looking at two home games to get to Los Angeles?
The good news is, Joe, I don't think they're going to play the Ravens again this year when they're the number one seed. So that's the
right.
Good news. You know, by the way, how drunk was the ending to that Bengals Chiefs game? I mean, what was Zach Taylor doing? Like, what were they doing? They had first and goal from the half-yard line, and they got five cracks at it and still couldn't punch it in the end zone. It was unbelievable. And then they started lining up in a shotgun when they were going for it on fourth and goal. It was, I'll tell you what, Cincinnati was lucky. If they had lost that game, oh, my gosh, their head coach would have been barbecued today. But, you know, they didn't. They won, and so everybody feels good. They're the AFC North champs. But do I think it's a big deal to get the one seed? Absolutely. I do. And I know we've had this conversation, and I don't know if you guys are going there or not, but I wouldn't play Derrick Henry even if he's ready to go. I wouldn't play. Save him. Get the number one seed. Get the extra week. Sit back. Watch everybody else beat their brains in, and then get ready for round two. I do think there's huge significance. And, oh, by the way, you get to do everything at home where you've had a lot of success under Mike Vrabel. They have been a very good home team. To me, it's a no-brainer. You go in there and you take care of business. You know, unfortunately for them, it looks like the Texans, I guess, are still playing hard. I mean, I don't know why. I was kind of hoping they would pack it in and think about the offseason, but they seem to still be playing for Cully. So, you know, it's not going to be easy, but you still got to win. You got to win that game. You got to find a way to win it, and you should, and get the number one seed and do it all from home and try to make that magical run, and hopefully the Keen comes back, and it's going to be a crazy atmosphere, a hard ticket to get a hold of, and we're going to be talking about maybe a special, special season. We'll see.
Darren McFarland on with us here on Robbie and Rexro, joins us every Monday morning at 9 o'clock. So Darren, switching gears to the Predators, you know, you win the game 6-1 on Saturday. Obviously, I mean, you score on the first shot of every period, so you'll take that every time. Honestly, I didn't really think the Predators played all that well in that game, and then you find a way to win 6-1. So I guess you'll take that. Overall, what have you made of the way the Predators have played since they come back from the break?
You know, if that's what not playing well looks like, you know, okay, whatever, you'll take it, right? I mean, Hal Gill, I'll give him credit. He had a great line with me in the first period intermission. I said, Hal, I would describe that period as an efficient period. Yes, their first two shots were goals. They only had seven shots in the first period, and they were leading 3-0. And Hal said, yeah, it's crazy like that. If you score every time you shoot, you don't need to take as many shots. And I said, you know what? That's a really good point.
Spoken, not bad, Skillsy.
Spoken just like you would expect from Skillsy, right? Yeah, it was a nice win, a nice rebound from the tough loss in Columbus where they fell in a shootout. Look, this team is fun. I'll just continue to say it over and over again. If you don't like this team, I don't know what you're looking for. I think this, to me, this relates to a fan base that works hard every day, right? And they, you know, they work hard for their money. And how do you not appreciate the way this team goes about their business? They're a team that doesn't take any crap. They push back, even if you don't push, they'll still push you. They're going to, you know, they're going to do all the dirty things. They're going to fight you for the puck. They're going to go into the dirty areas. They don't care about greasy goals. They're okay with that. They celebrate that. They, you know, they hit you. They block shots. This team just, like I said, I don't know what you don't like about this team. I'm sure everybody would like to see them score a little bit more, you know, but this is kind of the makeup of this team, and they're just a team that's going to get after you, and they're just going to make life miserable for you for 60 minutes. And there's a lot of teams, as you've seen, and Robbie, I think you would agree with this, that throughout the course of the game, there's teams that just say, you know what? Like, at first I was willing to go in those hard areas, but by the third period, they're not willing to do it anymore. They're like, yeah, I'm not really interested in getting hit by Tanner Janot anymore. I'm not really interested in getting hit by Jakob Trenin anymore. I'm just not really interested. So, you know what? You take the puck. I'll sit back, and I'll play defense. I don't really want to battle you anymore. And what's not to like about that? Like I said, I think this team is fun. I think this is what they are. I do think it's a hard game plan to do that for 82 games. Like, there's just some games where it's going to be hard to, because think about what you have to do to get yourself up to play that style, right? But I guess with the success, it'll be easier. But I just think over the course of an 82-game season, it will be difficult to duplicate that night in and night out. But overall, I mean, I think this team just continues to shine. They continue to be above board, above the expectations of what everybody thought. Philip Forsberg's having an unbelievable year. I mean, at some point we need to have fun with, okay, if let's do the over-under, 34.5 goals. You taking the over or the under this year for Philip Forsberg? You know, Tanner Janot, 22.5 goals. You taking the over or the under, right? We can have fun with over-unders the rest of the way because there's some guys that are they're putting in some pretty special seasons. At least it looks that way through 33 games.
Well, you hit on something, Darren, that, you know, the expectations, they're way beyond that. It's ultimately about winning and losing. I mean, that's, you know, that's fans are going to embrace a team that's winning and not one that's losing. But I still think the likability just in the last year, or the watchability, however you want to phrase it, like, that's – it's almost like the Titans' defense, like just about a 180 from a year ago.
Yeah.
You know, isn't that just stunning a little bit just to see how they've transformed into what you just described?
Yeah, on both fronts, yes. I mean, there's no doubt about it, Joe. It's a really good comparison because I think everybody felt like, at least I did, I know I was saying, look, they're like the Titans defense, I kept saying, oh, it's going to be better. But that's not really saying a whole lot. Like, it can't be worse. So it's going to improve. The question is, how much is it going to improve? And I think to your point, it's improved massively, right? I think it's exceeded expectations. I mean, their defense is now – I'll tell you what jumps out at me is they've got guys on that defense that just – you know, we've always talked about there's certain guys that just have a knack for where the ball is. They're a magnet for the football. They've got those guys on defense. Like, they've got certain guys, like, you don't know where they are, just find the football, and that's usually where you'll find David Long. That's where you'll find Bud Dupree. I'm going to put him in that category. Bud Dupree is always around the ball, right? I mean, Zach Cunningham is always around the ball. Like, they've got guys on this defense. If you lose them, just look for the football, and that's probably where you're going to find those guys. And then Denico Autry has obviously been a huge addition. And then flipping it over to the Predators, yeah, I mean, now, like you said, it's one thing to talk about working hard, right? Like, this is what we're going to do. Like, okay, well, that's great. But you got to do it. And so they've been going out and doing it, and they're sitting there second in the division right now with 42 points and right up at the top in the Western Conference. I mean, they're what, 3 points out from being the number one seed in the Western Conference?
Yeah.
Think about that. I mean, they're not too far off from being at the midway point of an 82-game season. I mean, they're getting really close to that. So, I mean, that's a pretty good gauge. And you're not only doing what you were going to do, but you're having success, to your point. So, yeah, I mean, I think both have been way above what everybody expected, and it's been a pleasant surprise. And, oh, by the way, when you're up above, way above those expectations, look how good your teams are. And certainly we're talking about two good teams in this market, and who doesn't love that? I know I do.
Well, Darren, we're sorry you had to trade in your scuba diving gear for snowshoes, but appreciate you taking time to join us this morning anyway.
Oh, we can probably do that later in the week.
I'm probably,
probably close to 80 degrees by Thursday. Who knows?
Be right back out there. Darren, appreciate you, brother.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Darren McFarland from Darren Donica Chase, our guest here on Robbie and Rex, also handles the pre- and post-game duties for the Nashville Predators Radio Network. We'll come back. We'll react a little bit to what Darren had to say. Welcome more of your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Reds fans, join us this for Smashville Live this Wednesday on 102.5 The Game. The show will air on Wednesdays during the Preds season from 6 to 7 p.m. featuring Preds players, former players, and other special guests. You can watch the show online via 102.5 The Game's Twitch, Facebook page, YouTube, and Twitter. So be sure to join us this hockey season for Smashville Live, brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, and Red Spirits and Wine in Bellevue. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, live from the Hillside Medical Game Studio. We are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, and YouTube. Our video streaming brought to you by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezvik here with you on this Monday morning. Thanks to Darren McFarland for joining us in the last segment. We are taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Got a text that says, I vividly remember the feeling on Jones Fracture Monday. I had to leave my desk for a quick cry in the bathroom. The conversations we're having today just blows my mind, makes me want to cry with happiness this time. This is coming from a texter on the text line.
I've never heard it referred to that way. Jones Fracture Monday. My goodness. Got Halloween and then the real scare, Jones Fracture Monday. Yeah, hey, pretty doom and gloom show that day. And, you know, I guess I would ask this because I know we said it, I wrote it, you know, they have no chance of making any kind of run without Derrick Henry. Still feel that way?
Well, I'll say this. If the defense continues playing the way that it's played as of late, you've got a chance in every game. I mean, yeah, you're going to have a chance in every game. Now, I still don't love this offense without Derrick Henry. I mean, we're talking about a great game the Titans played yesterday, and they did. They still threw the ball for 120 yards. So it's not like, you know, you're out there lighting things up. I know we're talking about a running back. I think Derrick Henry coming back in helps the passing game pretty dramatically as well. So I still think if the Titans are going to make it to the Super Bowl, they need to have Derrick Henry in there. Do they have a chance without him? I say yes, because the defense has just been playing so well as of late.
Well, and also just the situation they've put themselves in. They put themselves in a spot where, again, if you win the next three games, you're in L.A. You win the next game and you get extra time and you have to be beaten at home to be knocked out of the playoffs. So, yeah, I agree. Like, they have a chance now. But to have anything from Derrick Henry, I think it's unrealistic to think that he's going to come back and you're going to see him have once he does, and we can revisit this, but, you know, a 30 carry, 183 yard game in the playoffs. But even if he has a 12 carry, 40 yard, one touchdown game, that matters. And I think you're right. It does affect the passing game. That's a big thing. The numbers for the backs replacing him very close to what he was doing, which is incredible, but they haven't shifted defenses the way he does, which helps the passing game a lot.
Well, and I still think a lot of the conversation in the playoffs is going to come down to what it's going to come down to anyway, and that is, like, eventually Ryan Tannehill is going to have to make some plays in order for you to win. And, you know, to his credit, I think he's done a really good job the last couple of weeks of taking care of the football. Corey Curtis talked about it earlier. Like, if the Titans don't turn the football over, most of the time they win based on the way that they play. So that's job number one from Tannehill. But I still think, like, if you're going to get to the Super Bowl, it's going to require Tannehill to step up and make some big plays at key times. That I don't feel any differently about that now than I did a couple weeks ago.
Totally agree. I mean, I'll go with, I think we talked about it last week, the two people who remain, you know, as important or maybe as on the spot as anyone, it's Tannehill and Todd Downing. I mean, those two guys, you're going to have great performances, whether Derrick Henry is full Derrick Henry, partial Derrick Henry, not involved. Regardless, those two guys are going to have to be great for them to actually get to Los Angeles.
Go back to the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Got a texture that says, is nobody else concerned about the targets to AJ that he dropped or wasn't able to haul in? This is coming from a texter on the text line.
Remind me. I mean,
there was one toward the end zone that got, I guess, somewhat broken up that you could have made an argument that he should have come down with. Really, other than that, I thought he was, I mean, you know, obviously it wasn't a very demonstrative game from AJ Brown yesterday, 2 catches for 41 yards. But like, I didn't come away from yesterday's game thinking to myself, AJ Brown should have made all these catches that he didn't make. I mean, he's only targeted 5 times.
I don't think that one by the end zone was a, I have to look at it again. I didn't think it was a drop at all, but there wasn't an egregious drop. He's had some this
year.
I don't think
it was a drop. I think he could have come down with it, but I wouldn't say it was a drop.
I mean, he's had some dropsies this year, right? You know, so that's been discussed. He's had his health issues this year. You know, one of all the wins they've had this year, I still think the second half against San Francisco, coming back to win that game, that's a big, big deal. That has made all this possible. And I think you saw a little bit of a change in that team, and that was about him. I mean, that was A.J. Brown starting with him. He turned that game around because he can still be a dominant player. Again, go back to the stat talked about earlier. Wrote about it in The Athletic. It was actually on the broadcast, so I stole it from them. Thank you, broadcast. But I did the math myself. 10-2, 27 points a game, the Titans this year. 10-2, 27 points a game when A.J. Brown plays. And by the way, that includes 2 games that he got hurt in and left early and when they didn't score nearly as much. So if you took those games out, it'd be over 30 points a game. When they don't have him, they're 1-3 and they score 17 a game. He is critical to this team, and I think you should feel good. Even though he only had 2 catches yesterday, they were both big plays. He drew another PI. Looks like he's locked in and ready to go for this run, and that's a big deal for the Titans.
Let's go back to the text line. Got a texter that William texting in says, which running back sits when the King returns? Can all 4 stay on the active roster? I mean, I guess if the Titans wanted to go that route, yes, technically all 4 could be on the active roster. I would not anticipate that's what ends up happening. It looks like, and again, this is just a total guess on my part, I would guess that Dontrell Hilliard probably the odd man out, even though I think he's played pretty well for the most part when he's been in there.
No, he's been very good and like Foreman, a guy who, you know, was not on a team. But I think it's him. I don't see how Foreman's even a consideration. I think Foreman, you want, even if Derrick Henry's back, Foreman getting a few carries isn't a bad idea. Certainly having him there available is a big deal. I mean, they can kind of replicate what they do with Derrick Henry, even though it's not the same player, obviously. And I just think McNichols has earned the trust as a third down back all year to probably keep that role, and Hilliard is probably odd man out. But, yeah, that won't be easy for the Titans because Hilliard has really done some nice things for them.
We'll continue to take your thoughts on the Titans on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. We'll also get into a wild situation with the Bucs yesterday at the Jets. Antonio Brown calling it a day and just running off the field yesterday. We'll get into that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Very odd situation. Antonio Brown boiled over, very upset on the sideline, took off his shoulder pads. Mike Evans, OJ Howard trying to convince him to keep them on. Obviously, they were unable to do so. He tossed his shoulder pads, stripped off his shirt and glove, threw those into the crowd, then ran across the field while the teams were still on the field, giving the crowd a peace out sign. I'll let you know when we hear something official on his status.
He is no longer a Buck. All right, that's the end of the story. Let's talk about the guys that went out there and won the game.
What a day yesterday for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. First off, I mean, they were losing to the Jets for pretty much the entire game. Brady throws a late touchdown pass, which he often does, and the Bucs come back and they win the game against New York. But that's not the story yesterday for Tampa Bay. Antonio Brown, as you just heard, standing on the sidelines, he's getting into it on the sidelines with his team, and then starts to take his shoulder pads off. Mike Evans is sitting there, like basically pleading with him to stop and to keep his shoulder pads on and to continue playing. Antonio Brown does not listen, eventually takes the shoulder pads off, throws them down on the sideline, and then runs off the field, taking his shirt off, chucking it into the stands, and exits the stadium running through the end zone. And as you heard from Bruce Arians, his days as a Tampa Bay Buccaneer are over. Joe Rexrode, I've seen a lot of crazy stuff before happen in sporting events, in the NFL. You know, as Corey Curtis brought up earlier, you know, Vince Young chucked his pads into the stands here in Nashville. At least that was after the game, so it wasn't while the game was going on. I have never seen anything quite like Antonio Brown. But honestly, yes, it was, you know, very strange, very shocking to see. But when you really think about it with Antonio Brown, there's not much that guy does that surprises me anymore.
So Ian Rappaport, during our show, went on NFL Network and delivered a very different kind of assessment of this situation. This is according to his understanding, which I can decipher that as according to Antonio Brown's agent. But according to Rappaport, Antonio Brown was told to go in even though he's injured. And because he refused because he's injured, then that became the whole back and forth with him and Arians, and you know, led to that wild scene, which to me, now I'm very interested to hear from Bruce Arians on that, because, you know, if you're a head coach in this league who is insisting on hurt players going in, well, that's a big problem for you. I'd be surprised if that's exactly how the conversation played out. That would be very surprising to me. But Ian Rappaport said, according to his understanding of the situation, that's what it was. So now it's, you know, it's spin and damage control on both sides. Now look, even if that is true, the way Antonio Brown handled it is just bizarre. And it's going to be really interesting to see if he gets back in the league. You said earlier on the show, when you're talented enough in this league, you keep getting extra chances. But man, he's a powder keg, and you know, we saw the thing with the vaccination card plus other stuff before with him. Talk about a massive risk. And now you look at the Bucs and look at this in the context of this race to come for the Super Bowl. Godwin gone, Brown gone. You still have Evans and really good tight ends and everything, but is that enough?
Well, let's go on and cut this off at the head. No, the Titans should not pick up Antonio Brown. Can we both agree on that?
yes, but I really want some people to beg for it. Come on, Titans fans. Stop getting mad at everybody saying you're the weakest one seed and start demanding John Robinson go look at Antonio Brown.
Get him in there. He can be your number two wide receiver behind A.J. Brown. A.J. Brown, Antonio Brown, both A.B.s together.
By the way, I texted a buddy of mine yesterday about that. I'm like, you know, did you see the Antonio Brown left the field on stuff? And he was like, what? And it turns out that he took that as AJ Brown. So no. For a few moments, he was like, what is happening? He quit the team after the game. So anyway, yeah, Brown and Brown. What can Brown do for you twice? Brown squared. What could Brown squared do for you? My goodness. Now,
well, in all seriousness, like look, far be it from me to doubt Tom Brady. Like, if you told me right now that the Bucs are back in the Super Bowl this year, I'd be like, okay, yeah, probably makes sense with Tom Brady. But I do look at their offense right now. You've got Mike Evans. You've got Gronk. And right now, that's pretty much it, man. Like, I know Fournette's probably going to be back at some point and be healthy here. And Keyshawn Vaughn actually has done not so bad since he's been in there. So they still have weapons offensively, but not having Chris Godwin and now not having Antonio Brown, that to me kind of changes what the Bucs are heading into the playoffs.
Yeah, and their defense hasn't been as good. Now, that's something that, you know, we saw what they did in the playoffs last year. So if that elevates, kind of like you just said with the Titans, the way they're playing defense, they have a chance. They had a chance in any game. Speaking of Vaughn, Bruce Arians had a comment yesterday. I mean, most people don't care about any comment other than the fact that he wouldn't say anything about Antonio Brown, who he stuck his neck out for and said, you know, all these wonderful things. But he did say Keyshawn Vaughn is a lead back in this league. And it's cool to finally see Keyshawn Vaughn get a chance. I always believed, like, that guy is going to hit some home runs in the NFL. And you see it, that he has the ability.
It was interesting to watch Brady's post-game press conference yesterday. I mean, he took a very – I guess, empathetic route with Antonio Brown. But, you know, like, inside, Brady's got to be just, like, fuming right now that this has ended up the way that it has with Antonio Brown. Again, not necessarily a huge surprise when you consider it's Antonio Brown and everything that goes on with that guy, but I don't imagine Tom Brady's too happy today.
No, but he also, he has to I mean, he has to know, he has to have known from the start, this was like, how long can you keep it together? That's basically right. What it is with him. And frankly, the answer to me is way longer than I would have guessed. Yeah. So, yeah, it's just, so here they are now. And of course, they would be fine had Godwin not been lost to a season ending injury. Now, I don't know. I just don't know that they have quite enough, but you're right. It is Tom Brady and they still have a good team.
Liam texting in says, AB might look good in Green Bay. Liam, you keep that stuff away from me. No one don't want to see any AB in Green Bay. No, thank you.
He's going to, I don't know. It's going to be really interesting. I'm really interested to hear what Bruce Arians has to say today about that whole thing about him being hurt and quote unquote demanding that he go back in the game.
Well, I mean,
that's a serious allegation.
It's a serious allegation. He didn't look too hurt to me when he's dancing off the field. So I'd be pretty surprised if he was all that hurt. That's just me. Obviously I'm not there. I'm not in the locker room. I don't know how hurt Antonio Brown was, but did a pretty good job of not looking hurt as he's running and dancing off the field into the locker room.
Oh, no doubt. I mean, it's just, this is where, again, we can take this to the discussion about newsbreakers in the NFL. You got to be able to sometimes look at like reports and say, okay, so where is that coming from and why is it coming from there? And I think you can look at Rappaport on this one and I think maybe that's one of those things where he needs to frame it. My understanding from the Brown camp is this is what they are saying.
Yeah.
He's putting this out there as like, is his understanding to me as a viewer or reader, someone says that tells me that you've asked both sides about it. I don't think there's going to be agreement on the Bucs side. Again, I want to hear from Bruce Arians on it, but my understanding of the situation, you need to say, here's what the Brown camp said. That's fine because it's obviously coming from the Brown camp. And obviously now they're in total damage control and they're trying to spin it as positively as possible for this ridiculous behavior. But in the meantime, now you have, again, you've put something out very serious. I'm with you. I don't think it doesn't add up at all based on everything we saw. But you put something pretty serious on an NFL head coach here.
You have, and it's interesting. Like, if you're Antonio Brown, you were in the perfect spot. I mean, you were on a really good team. Now Chris Godwin's gone down. You've got a chance to be a huge factor as you move forward here. And now you just walk out of the stadium, and it's all done at this point. Like, the Buccaneers have taken you back repeatedly when most teams probably wouldn't, based on the way that he's conducted himself as of late. It's just amazing to me that it's week 17 and this all just blows up right in his face.
Yeah, I mean, Mike Evans is over there. There was like the fan video was the best.
Yeah.
Really, which is kind of wild too. Like, how are the broadcast crew, how are you not getting all this? They didn't get a lot of it, but the fan video from the stands kind of showed Mike Evans, pleading with him, like, dude, please, and he just, no, nope, that's okay. I'm going to go ahead and make a little show here. And boy, it's just bizarre, the whole thing. It's also bizarre that it took the Bucs till the very end to win that game. But, the Jets, man, they gotten better.
When you got the Pharaoh, sometimes you got to make things a little bit more dramatic. That's one word to describe that day yesterday for Tampa Bay is dramatic. No question about it. We'll come back. We'll continue to take your thoughts on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com 615-737-1025. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in. Final segment of the day here on Robbie and Rex Road, ESPN 102.5 The Game, brought to you by Volunteer State Bank. Real people, real solutions right here. Member FDIC, equal housing lender. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Monday morning. Taking your thoughts on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Chris texting in says, Arians was probably asking Brown to go out there and block. Brown said he ain't no Corey Davis, and he bolted. Said he got out of there. I ain't doing any of that blocking nonsense.
Wow. Corey Davis, good blocker, by the way.
Yeah. Big blocker.
Blocking matters in receivers. Just just making that point. Yeah, I don't know. I'm actually looking forward to Bruce Arians' presser today.
Maybe for the first time ever. We'll see what happens on that front. Joe, what did you think of Tannehill yesterday? 13 of 18, so he didn't throw the ball that much in that game. Didn't have to. Throws for two touchdowns, only 120 yards through the air, but did not turn the ball over. That's key number one with Ryan Tannehill. What did you think of the way he played yesterday?
I thought he played well. I don't remember a pass where you're like, whoa, what are you doing? He made some good throws in not ideal conditions. Got some chunk plays, couple with AJ Brown. You know, you got a wide open Firkser, but you still got to put touch on that ball. I thought he was good. I think it's been six straight good quarters for him. Now maybe his performance had to do with how fired up he was to get revenge on the Dolphins.
Yeah,
it all paid off. A week of steam coming out of his nostrils finally paid off. But it is funny that AJ Brown admitted that Tannehill wanted to put it on them at the end of the game. So Tannehill had a little bit in there to want to stick it to the Dolphins. As AJ Brown, bless AJ Brown for letting everyone know that.
I would be really interested to see what he actually said. That'd be awesome. We got like a mic'd up segment we can dig into.
I'd love to know that too. Did he use any profanity? You know, which even that for Ryan Tannehill would seem a little bit odd, but I'd like to know. Also, Taylor Lewan had a lot of sort of emotional comments, about what this means to him. I mean, he's a guy who was here on the field when these Titans were just terrible a few years ago. He's been through the whole thing. He was, man, on the sideline late in the game, he was going up and he was like grabbing John Robinson, and, I mean, he was whooping it up on that sideline.
Yeah, Lewan's made it pretty clear. He really likes being here. He's kind of gone out of his way to talk about that multiple times this year.
Are you suggesting that he's working his way and trying to stay on this team next year?
I don't know that I'm necessarily suggesting that he's doing it intentionally, but I do think he recognizes that that's legitimately a possibility that he won't be next year.
Oh, yeah. Of course. I mean, he knows how the league works. And what I would be interested in is if it were to come down to we can cut you because the dead money's low now, or what do you think about reworking this deal to stay? How would he look at that? Would he look at that like, yeah, I love it here so much, I'm willing to do that, or I think I can make more money, you know, elsewhere. I think that I'm of higher value than that. And because I don't know what the answer is. I don't know which would be the right thing to do, but I'd be really interested to see how he would view that situation.
It is pretty amazing right now to watch this narrative from the national media. And look, I avoid this discussion a lot because I think a lot of times it gets way overblown. It's not really overblown this last little bit here. There's a lot of discussion today about, oh, the Titans are going to be the worst number one seed since blank. Ross Tucker put this out there yesterday.
Yep.
Titans going to be the worst number one seed since blank. In a related note, Vrabel is coach of the year. Ross Tucker then going on to say, didn't realize the Titans had such a sensitive fan base. Look at recent number one seeds and ask yourself how many would have only been favored by 3 points at home against that Miami team. Vrabel getting this team to earn the number one seed is incredible, but they're objectively worse than other recent number ones. By the way, who cares about what they were favored by? They won by 31 points.
Right. So his evidence is that they were also underrated by those people.
Right.
Like his evidence is that they basically misjudged also here. First of all, I think if they get the one, I think it will be an interesting, if you can objectively look at it, you can say, yes, this is not the same one seed as like the Chiefs as the one seed. And everybody's like, how is anyone going to beat that team? In a lot of years, the one seed is a dominant team that it's like, oh, my gosh, who is going to go into that city against that team and win? So from that perspective, I think it'll be interesting to look back and compare the Titans. But you could also flip it around on the Titans and say they are here with the best wins in the league despite extraordinarily bad circumstances. So if they, if those circumstances are improving as they are, and they really improve and they get Derrick Henry back and all of a sudden they have everybody back and they've already done this, are you sure? Are you sure they are a week one seed?
Well, look, I'm not sitting here and saying that the Titans are about to go to the Super Bowl, because I still think Kansas City is going to have a lot to say about what happens in the AFC. But if you're watching this team play and you're not even leaving open the possibility that, hey, maybe they're actually a pretty good football team, and with Derrick Henry coming back, they've got a chance to make a run here, I think you're crazy. Like, I think this team has a legitimate chance to go to the Super Bowl. I would say a good chance to go to the Super Bowl.
I would agree. I would also, as a Titans fan, I would advise you to look at it this way. You should say, thank you, Ross Tucker. And thank you, all these other people who are going to keep saying this, because any little tiny psychological edge that you can have while being the one seed is pretty sweet, right? I mean, if you can be the one seed and still be disrespected, then that's actually a pretty good deal. I think Mike Vrabel will take that all day long. He's like, bring it on, man. Bring all this to me. And let's make sure the guys have their phones on and are paying attention to this stuff. Why not?
I usually don't get caught up in this stuff. Like, I think a lot of times Titans fans, quite frankly, whine a little bit too much about the lack of respect from the national media. This is kind of weird, though. Last day or so, it's, and people are just all over the Titans.
Yeah, well, and this year, with the AFC in particular, we've kind of gone through the whole thing of, like, Kansas City, the dominant, and then it's like, okay, but Bills kicked their butt. They're amazing. Well, the Titans beat them. Look at the Colts. Look at the Patriots. Oh, everybody, the Belichick, you messed up. Belichick's going to – and now it's kind of like, okay, maybe not. We kind of cycled through everybody. Now, there have been moments this year, I think, especially before Derrick Henry got hurt. I think there's been moments this year where nationally there was discussion like, wow, maybe they are the best team. Yeah. But pretty brief. And, yeah, I think now – I think maybe one thing people are maybe – overlooking a little bit is their defense. And I think this is also an example that people still don't watch them a ton.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question about that. That's going to do it for us today here on Robbie and Rex Show. Joe, great show as always, my friend.
Glad got the router working. I'm hugging it as we speak, and we'll dust the snow off for tomorrow.
That's right. Dusting the snow off tomorrow. We'll welcome your thoughts tomorrow all show long as we continue to look ahead at the Titans and their pursuit of the number one seed in the AFC. That's going to do it for us today here on Robbie and Rex Road. Darren Donica Chase is coming up next. This is ESPN 102.5 The Game.